entire team there. Our board op today, Gary Baca, our assistant producer, Romero Funes, today's show produced by myself, Margaret Prescott. If you'd like a copy of today's show, please contact the Pacifica Radio Archives at 1-800-735-0230 or go online to pacificaradioarchives.org. We're going to have a Labor Day special that will be on the air tomorrow. We hope that you tune in for that. Thank you for listening. This is your host, Margaret Prescott.
And you are listening to 90.7 KBOO Portland, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM and online at kboo.org. Coming up this morning at 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary at 10:15, Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11, on Between the Covers, David Naiman talks to Dow Strom about her new collection of poetic fragments, You'll Always Be Someone from Somewhere Else. But next, it's Press Watch, Teresa Mitchell's weekly look at the news you're not supposed to know. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support, and if you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm and click on Donate.
In celebration of our 50th anniversary, KBOO is teaming up with the Mississippi Records Music and Film Series. KBOO will be hosting Coal Miner's Daughter on Wednesday, September 5th at 7:30 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater in Portland. This film from 1980 chronicles the life of country singer Loretta Lynn. Sissy Spacek brings sincerity and depth to her portrait of Loretta and does her own singing in the movie, as does Beverly D'Angelo in the role of Patsy Cline. Tommy Lee Jones also delivers one of his best performances. Again, that's Coal Miner's Daughter on Wednesday, September 5th at 7:30 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater, 4122 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Well, I was born to coal miner's daughter.
This is Cesar Chavez. You're listening to KBOO, listener-sponsored radio.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. Well, the first thing I'd like to do this week is actually reverse the flow, because there's some information that I'd like to know and that I haven't been able to find out. And it's about hand, foot, and mouth disease. I know three people who've gotten it. One of them was a baby and got over it. And two of them had eczema, and oh my gosh. The thing is, hand, foot, and mouth disease in the medical literature is listed as a pretty mild thing. But if you've got eczema or psoriasis or something like that, oh my God, it's horrible. And so I'm really trying to find out just how common this is in the broadcast area. I have called around, tried to get an interview on it last week. I have been looking online, and really, it's come to this. I haven't been able to get good information. Let me tell you a little bit about it. It's what I found out. It attacks the nerves. In some ways, it kind of reminds me of shingles. It produces lesions that are really very painful. And for most people, it's an extremely annoying and painful thing that goes away after about a week. But if you've got eczema, then it's actually dangerous. There's been quite the outbreak of it in China and I think Malaysia. One person died in China, I think. So this is a call out to you. Do you have information on it? And I'm asking you to respond by using my social media, at KBOO Press Watch on Twitter, at KBOO Press Watch on Twitter. Please respond in that way, especially, please respond if you have specific information on it and you're in the medical field, or if you have experienced it yourself, or if you know of people very close to you who have gotten it, because I'm just trying to figure out how big this thing is. The other way you can respond on social media is at my Facebook profile, which is simply Teresa Mitchell, and you'll just have to look it up. Let's see, the image I put up most recently is of the bronzed shoes that have been used as art to protest the ICE abduction and separation of children. So if you know about hand, foot, and mouth disease, please respond either at Twitter, at KBOO Press Watch, or Teresa Mitchell on Facebook, and hopefully I will find it. I put a little thing on Facebook, so I think that'll be the first thing that pops up if you search my name. So, and speaking of social media, speaking of the interwebs, you can find Press Watch. You can find this week's Press Watch on KBOO.fm, and we have this thing where you can promote it to the front page, which I dropped the ball. I didn't do it. So I just, out of curiosity, I wanted to see how easy it was to find today's page, and it's not so easy to find just right at this moment, I discovered. So if you pull up kboo.fm, the easiest way to find it is to look up Let's Talk About Socialism, and then it will pop up. And I'd like you to pull it up if for no other reason than the fact that I shared a lovely photograph of a page in Jung's Red Book. It's just pretty. I like it. I mean, who knew that he could draw dragons so well? So pull up kboo.fm and then pull up Let's Talk About Socialism, which I hope to do later in the broadcast, talk about socialism with you. Don't call quite yet, but I'll give you the number, 503-231-8187. I'll give you the number again. Don't worry about that. So let's jump straight ahead to This Week in Whiteness. Officer Roy Oliver didn't look too happy in his mugshot after being sentenced to 15 years for grabbing his war rifle at a party, hosing down a car full of innocent unarmed teenagers for no reason, and killing 15-year-old Jordan Edwards, who never did anything worse in his whole short life than go to a party with his friends. So cheer up, Roy. If you'd had been a person of color, you'd be getting life without parole or worse. So see, that white skin is still working for you. The pattern still holds. And you, Roy, will probably be working at a security firm a few years from now while you're out on parole, and you can get another one of those sweet AR-15s under the table. And according to TheRoot.com, the state of Vermont's lone black female lawmaker, Representative Rukaya Kaya Morris, Democrat of Bennington, announced that she will not be running for re-election this year, in part because of the overwhelming amount of racist threats she's received. Morris, who won the Democratic nomination earlier this month, shared her decision to withdraw her candidacy last Friday on Facebook. If elected, it would have been her third term as a representative for the state's House. More on that article at TheRoot.com. And I think it's pretty shocking. Someone wins the nomination and then says, you know, I'm not going to go there. A few headlines before I get to talking about socialism. From advances at sciencemag.org, Arctic Ocean measurements reveal a near doubling of ocean heat content relative to the freezing temperature in Beaufort Gyre halocline over the past three decades. The warming is linked to anomalous solar heating of surface waters in the northern Chukchi Sea, a main entryway for halocline waters to join the interior Beaufort Gyre. I'm going to stop there and say, when they say halocline, they're talking about water that has divided and doesn't mix up because part of it's dense, cold, and salty, and part of it is otherwise, in this case, surface water that has been warmed. And so they write, summer solar heat absorption by the surface waters has increased fivefold over the same time period, chiefly because of reduced sea ice coverage. It has shown that the solar heating considered altogether with subduction rates of surface water in this region is sufficient to account for the observed halocline warming. Heat absorption at the basin margins and its subsequent accumulation in the ocean interior therefore have consequences for the Beaufort Gyre sea ice beyond the summer season. And again, speaking for myself, this is revealing why certain old chunks of ice have been melting so quickly, because the water underneath has been, well, it's been warming up. And so that's just another aspect of the melting. Another, and by the way, when you hear a projection, as you're about to, about when the Arctic sea ice is going to disappear, this is another thing which will make it happen sooner than what they're already projecting. So let me go to Rolling Stone, where they wrote, last week, scientists learned that 40-foot piles of compacted sea ice, some of the oldest and most durable clusters in the Arctic, are breaking away from the coast of Greenland and drifting out to sea. One meteorologist called it scary, but it was hardly unexpected. As the Earth's climate heats up, the idea of a blue Arctic, disappearance of sea ice for at least part of the year, leaving only open ocean, has long been predicted by climate scientists. Some researchers believe that you might be able to kayak to the North Pole as early as 2030. Others think the sea ice might last until 2040 or longer. That's just the opening paragraph of a very long article. Well, not very long, but a long article at rollingstone.com, so you can find that that way. And here's a reminder about one of the aspects of that from futurism.com. Insects make up about 2/3 of all life on Earth. And speaking for myself, they say that because they're going by weight or numbers or something. But it's an impressive stat all the same. And they write, but there has been some kind of horrific decline. That's according to Professor Dave Goulson of Sussex University, who contributed to a study. And he was talking to The Guardian in London. He is quoted saying, we appear to be making vast tracts of land inhospitable to most forms of life and are currently on a course for ecological Armageddon. If we lose the insects, then everything is going to collapse, end quote. Flying insects pollinate flowers, provide food for a host of animals, control pests, and contribute to vital decomposition processes. Simply put, there are sure to be some major ecological effects if their populations continue to drop. Scientists don't know exactly why the decline is so severe. The destruction of habitats, increased pesticide usage, and climate change are all being raised as contributing factors for the insect deaths. Perhaps the most disturbing aspect of the study, they write, is the fact that numbers are dropping in conservation sites. All of the locations where samples were taken are said to be well kept, which might indicate that the situation is even more dire elsewhere. The next step for the research is to corroborate these findings with other areas. There are also plans to find out more about the general insect population by studying non-flying creatures, which actually may be faring better. In response, they write, we will also need to take stock of activities that we know have a negative effect on the amount of insects in the environment. This means reducing our usage of harmful pesticides and ensuring that spaces conducive to insect life are preserved. Much more to that article. Once again, you can find it at futurism.com. Hasn't been a lot written about this by web research standards, so I urge you to stay on top of it. But more than that, I would say the next time you hear that there's going to be a general pesticide spraying from helicopters of the forest, I think that we have a right to collectively say no, absolutely not. No more helicopter spraying. I don't care what it does to the profits of the timber industry. No more of that. Just my opinion, of course. Now going to WSWS.org. Google search result, on Tuesday, U.S. President Donald Trump accused technology monopolist Google of manipulating search results to suppress right-wing news sources. Quote, Google search results. I just want to say resorts instead of results. I don't know why. I'll try it again. Google search results for Trump news show only the viewing and reporting of fake news media, Trump wrote in a Twitter post. In other words, he said, they have it rigged for me and others so that almost all stories and news is bad. Fake CNN is prominent, end quote. And Trump added, quote, Google and others are suppressing voices of conservatives and hiding information in news that is good. They are controlling what we can and cannot see, end quote. Later in the day, Trump told reporters that by engaging in censorship, Facebook, Google, and Twitter are really treading on very, very troubled territory, and they have to be careful, end quote. Speaking for myself, of course, coming from Trump, that's a threat. Returning to the article in WSWS.org, Trump was reacting to actions by the internet giants to promote publications aligned with his opponents in the ruling class like CNN, The New York Times, and The Washington Post. Facebook and Twitter have also taken action in recent weeks against the fascistic social media personality Alex Jones. This is one of the things I love about WSWS.org is that when they're talking about the fascistic social media personality Alex Jones, they just call him the fascistic social media personality that he is. But returning to what they have written, contrary to Trump's claims, however, the main target of the censorship measures adopted by the internet companies is not right-wing, but rather left-wing, socialist, and anti-war publications. In August 2017, the World Socialist website, and that's WSWS.org, revealed that changes to Google search algorithm announced in April sharply reduced search traffic to left-wing sites, with search traffic to the World Socialist website falling by 75%. Skipping ahead, the company, meaning Google, said every year we issue hundreds of improvements to our algorithms to ensure that they surface high-quality content in response to users' queries. We continually work to improve Google search, and we never rank search results to manipulate political sentiment, end quotes. WSWS.org writes, these statements are false. In an April 25, 2017 blog post, Google engineering VP Ben Gomez reported that the company had made algorithmic updates, as a quote, to surface more authoritative content, end quote. In practice, Gomez explained, this involved a team of paid evaluators reviewing Google searches and downgrading those that showed, quote, alternative viewpoints unless the query indicates the user is seeking an alternative viewpoint, end quote. So, in summary, and speaking for myself, yes, Google is manipulating what you can see. And that's why I keep bringing up WSWS.org. I'm not quite exactly politically aligned with them. Pretty close, but not quite exactly. I view them as an important news source. And Google, and it's not just Google, Google and other social media is using their algorithms, using their computers to make sure that you don't normally see that. And given the amount of content and the nature of the internet, this ensures that, as they say, their search traffic goes down 75%. It's censorship. And of course, Trump is not only wrong, but speaking the actual opposite of the truth per usual. And this brings me back to KBOO.FM. I think that we are in a terrific struggle now, politically, socially, for the climate, against the Jim Crow mass incarceration state, and we need tools on our side. And this means that KBOO.FM must become what it can be. And what it can be, I think, is a combination of broadcast and online information, each feeding into the other. So I encourage you to do what you can. We don't have infinite resources, and so our website isn't, you know, our website can be a little clunky, but it's all the stuff is in there. And it's fascinating to prowl through, and I urge you just to pull up KBOO.FM. I also urge you to tell other people, both by using the web to link to KBOO.FM and by just find someone that you know wants this kind of information and tell them that we exist, because like WSWS.org, our message gets drowned out. It's the synergy between the web and the broadcast that I think can make KBOO more powerful. And this is your people's community radio station. We're putting out some viewpoints here that are being actively suppressed, and the demagogue president and his supporters have made everything more fraught. And he is pushing, as he was speaking to evangelicals earlier this week, I think yesterday, and he tried to scare them with Antifa, but that's just the latest thing that he has done. There's so much that's being done to create a very hardcore of conformist, fascist, racists. Did you know, for example, did you hear on Democracy Now, I wonder, that U.S. citizens who have brown skin are having their passports taken away for no reason other than racism as they visit Mexico? So you can go to Mexico, passports taken away, and guess what? You try to get back into the U.S., well, that's illegal. You can't prove that you're a citizen. It's getting worse rapidly, and this is your tool. This is what you have. This is your nonviolent tool, I'll put it that way. You need to support KBOO. You can support us right now at kboo.fm just by pulling us up. You support us, but by also send us some money if you can. If you got a job, you should pull up kboo.fm and just tag us with a little bit of money. It really helps. And that's our main source of revenue. That's the only one we can really count on, is your contributions, kboo.fm. So if you care about the fight back, kboo.fm, send us some money. Send us $20. Why not? Okay, continuing with headlines. Well, let me rephrase that. I have another topic, and it is North Korea, and this is a I told you so thing. I could see that Trump was just grandstanding, and that with when he went to North Korea with his warmonger in tow, John Bolton, his real intent was to make a big splash, make himself look good, maybe do well in the midterms, talk peace, and then get around to war a little bit later. And so there's a lot of information on that. I'm going to talk about that. But I also want to talk about socialism. So it's 21 minutes after the hour. You're listening to KBOO Portland. And I wonder if you're listening on a terrestrial broadcast, if you're listening on a radio, which is a handy thing because it can't be traced. It's one of the last few free media things. You just have a set, you pick it up all clear, and it's just between you and the radio. Or maybe you're listening on KBOO.fm. So I want to talk North Korea, but I also want to talk socialism. Here's the number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Ask that you keep your comments and questions to the topics that have already been brought up. There's an article by Peter Simons here again at WSWS.org. U.S. threatens North Korea with resumptions of war games. Amid mounting signs, he writes that U.S.-North Korea talks are breaking down. U.S. Defense Secretary James Mattis announced yesterday that the Pentagon was ending its suspension of joint war games with South Korea. This highly provocative step is certain to further inflame tensions with North Korea following President Trump's decision last Friday to cancel Secretary of State Mike Pompeo's trip to Pyongyang for another round of negotiations. At a Pentagon press conference, Mattis declared, quote, "We took the step to suspend several of the largest exercises as a good faith measure coming out of the Singapore summit. We have no plans at this time to suspend any more exercises," end quote. After his summit with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un in June, Trump announced that we will be stopping the war games in South Korea, describing the joint exercises as, quote, "very provocative," end quote. Mattis noted that even after the Singapore summit, smaller joint exercises were ongoing all the time on the peninsula. He made clear that the announcement was aimed at putting pressure on North Korea by threatening to restart major annual war games scheduled for early next year. He's quoted as saying, "We're going to see how the negotiations go, and then we'll calculate the future," end quote. While the media routinely describes the joint exercises as defensive, they have always been a rehearsal for war with North Korea. Last year's massive Full Eagle and Key Resolve drills, which were delayed until after the Winter Olympics in South Korea in February, involved about 23,000 American and 300,000 South Korean troops. Since 2015, U.S.-South Korean operational plans have dropped their defensive disguise and include preemptive strikes on North Korea and decapitation raids against its top leaders. The suspension of large-scale military drills now being reversed was the only U.S. concession made to North Korea. In a joint statement, Trump and Kim agreed to the complete denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula, but the process, which was not spelled out even in general terms, has been interpreted differently from the outset by the two sides. The Trump administration has insisted that North Korea commit unilaterally to dismantle its nuclear facilities, hand over its nuclear weapons, and allow highly intrusive inspections before any easing of crippling U.S. and international sanctions or any move towards a formal end to the 1950-53 Korean War. North Korea has frozen its nuclear and missile testing, taken steps towards dismantling some of its facilities, and handed over the remains of U.S. soldiers killed in the Korean War. At the same time, it has called for a step-by-step process whereby it would dismantle its nuclear programs in return for sanctions relief and U.S. security guarantees, including a formal peace treaty. Having never agreed to unilaterally give up nuclear weapons, the North Korean regime publicly lashed out at Washington's gangster-like demands, that's their quote, after Pompeo's visit to Pyongyang last month. According to U.S. press, the reason for Trump's decision last week to call off Pompeo's planned trip this week was a letter variously described as belligerent and aggressive from a top North Korean official, Kim Jong-chol. So there's much more to that article in WSWS.org. I also have one from 38 North. And we'll see if we have time for that. I invite your calls, 503-231-8187. I'll go to the first caller. Hi, you're on the air. Eric.
Oh, yeah. How you doing?
Doing well, thank you.
I love your show. It's absolutely fascinating. Great show there.
Thank you.
And, you know, well, I think I lost my train of thought right there.
Okay, well, give us a call back if the train reappears. Number to call, 503-231-8187. And I have been talking about a number of topics. And we have more than half an hour now to discuss those topics and to discuss socialism. And JacobinMag.com writes in an article by Lewis Bassett that new polling data from Reuters reveals something a bit shocking, even for those of us who believe we have the winning formula. The left's flagship policy demands are extremely popular. Poll respondents were asked whether they supported Medicare for all, tuition-free college, and abolishing ICE. Popular support for these demands was substantial, really substantial, especially given their relative novelty in the political mainstream. 70% of Americans said they support a single-payer or Medicare for all insurance system, including 85% of registered Democrats and 52% of registered Republicans. Compare these numbers to 2014, when only 21% of Americans thought we should have a single-payer system. So, quoting those stats from the Jacobin magazine, JacobinMag.com again, that's 85% think these are good ideas, as opposed to 21% just over a few years. Socialism. People are actually saying the word. And as I've said before, I rather enjoy getting on a 25,000-watt transmitter and saying socialism. You feel that reverberation? And I want to talk about it. These are very mild socialistic reforms we're talking about. Medicare for all, tuition-free college, abolish ICE. These are very mild things. Abolishing ICE particularly, that's just stepping back from a rather horrific racist fascism. And tuition-free college is something that is very common in Europe and Scandinavia. Medicare for all as well. These are just things that keep the society from collapsing. This is very mild, but it's the foot in the door, perhaps. Returning to JacobinMag.com and talking about socialism. The number of Americans who want to eliminate the private insurance industry and replace it with a single universal public program has more than tripled in just 4 years. Activists have been pushing for a single payer for decades, but it seemed hopeless until very recently. Democrats feeling secure in light of what seemed to be a public opinion and beholden to donors in the healthcare industry long refused to even entertain the notion. In 2009, establishment Democrats mercilessly killed the public option, which isn't even halfway to a single payer system. In 2016, Hillary Clinton said single-payer will, quote, never, ever come to pass, end quote. It was Bernie Sanders who shattered the consensus by insisting on the campaign trail that Americans need Medicare for all, that we deserve it, and that we can have it if we can locate the political will to put people's health over insurance companies' profits. This message resonated with ordinary people who experience crushing out-of-pocket health care costs. That would be you, returning to the text. Arbitrary claims denials, terrifying gaps in coverage, disorienting changes in provider networks, and the constant compulsion to calculate big life decisions like whether to get divorced or change jobs around the availability and quality of health insurance. It turned out that while only 21% said they supported Medicare for All, another 49% of Americans were waiting for permission to think it was possible. Now that they have the permission, they're all in. So I'm reading from JacobinMag.com, and I'm talking about the popularity of socialist ideas. And I was trying to gauge the feelings around socialism. And so what I did was I put socialism in a search engine, a news search engine, to see what sort of results popped up. And I'm not very efficient right now because I have two dead computers and a working cell phone. So I have printed it out, and I'm going to be slow trying to find the list of results from socialism. I will say that looking for socialism in the news brings up a whole lot of hostile words, because the powers that be are really kind of terrified of what's actually happening right now. Bring up socialism and you find all these, here it is. And you find all of these articles about how that would be such a bad idea. Don't even go there. Let me read some of these headlines. Don't hold your breath waiting for the socialist sweep in 2018. That's from the Federalist. How to explain the failures of socialism to a teenager. That's from Politico. Stranger.com, socialism uber alles. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is a classic limousine liberal. Washington Examiner says it's time to reclaim socialism from the dirty word category. So there's one positive mention. Washington Post says millennials may love socialism, but socialism won't love them back. And interestingly, the Investor's Business Daily's headline is a little more neutral. What is democratic socialism? A democratic socialist explains. Vox.com writes, democratic socialism threatens minorities. That's a popular meme in the conservatives these days. It's like, suddenly they really care about minorities. Oh my goodness. They're just totally on your side all of a sudden. If it means that you don't choose socialism. Haaretz writes, race and socialism define the first day of Florida campaign for governor. There was a worse article from Haaretz. New York Times has how to argue with a young socialist. The Daily Signal, fascist newspaper, writes, this is what voters need to know about democratic socialism. So you get the picture. Socialism, scary. Go back. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. I want to talk with you about socialism. And of course, I'm going to have to define socialism a little bit. And that's easy enough. You can find socialism on Wikipedia, and it has a lengthy article, which, you know, ain't bad. You know, Wikipedia being what it is. You can probably hear me flipping my pages around as I'm being 20th century retro here. Here we go. Wikipedia writes, socialism is a range of economic and social systems characterized by social ownership and workers' self-management of the means of production, as well as political theories and movements associated with them. So that's a pretty easy sentence. That's what you can find in Wikipedia, and all of these conservative newspaper owners and media owners would really prefer that you think of socialism as associated inexorably with totalitarianism. As socialism as only in its crippled guise in Russia in the mid-20th century, as only being inevitably being top-down, harsh, cruel and poor regimes. And of course, that's really not what socialism is, so I'll just read that sentence again. Socialism is a range of economic and social systems characterized by social ownership and workers, self-management of the means of production, as well as the political theories and movements associated with them, period. So there's a little bit in that sentence. It's really not hard to understand. When we talk about socialism, commonly, publicly, when Bernie Sanders or Ocasio-Cortez talk about socialism, they're really talking about very mild, as I said, socialistic reforms. That's just the way the word's being used. I'm not going to fight it right now. So I'd like to know what you think. Medicare for all. For it or against it? Free college. Why not? You for free college? We have free roads. And we have free fire departments. Why don't we have free college? For that matter, why don't we have free water? But I could get into that. The number to call, 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. Continuing on defining socialism, social ownership may refer to forms of public, collective, or cooperative ownership, or to citizen ownership of equity. There are many varieties of socialism, and there's no single definition encapsulating all of them, though social ownership is the common element shared by its various forms. So, speaking for myself, why should we pay insurance companies to continually figure out how to get bigger profits for their CEOs and their stockholders first by denying health care? And that's the only way. You can't make a profit with health insurance unless you figure out a system of denying health care. That's what it's for. That's what it does. That's why it makes a profit. Why in the world do we have this parasitic system in between us and the ordinary human right of health care? Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Socialism, let's talk about it, and I'll go to the first caller. Brandon's on the air.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going well, thanks.
Basically, I'm a huge proponent of socialism. I think it's what we need. It's for the common good, which people can't seem to see that. I just wrote a paper on basically the Russian constructivist movement, which is an aspect of graphic design that was really popular during the Bolshevik movement, and basically how, you know, it helped give, you know, the Bolshevik regime like a, you know, like a an identity or something like that. And so basically I wanted to ask you, socialism didn't work in Russia. Well, it worked in a lot of ways, but in some ways it didn't. People keep saying, well, it's just going to end up like, you know, like how it ended up with Stalin or something like that, which a lot of things were good, but a lot of things were bad. And like Richard Wolff and other economists like him have said that socialism didn't work in Russia the way it was intended to, which is pretty obvious. And the fact that people keep saying socialism doesn't work, but really it's the fact that we've never been able to really implement it correctly or under the right circumstances, partially because Russia was already super poor and it was experiencing two world wars.
Oh yeah, let's dial down on that just for a second. I'm sorry to interrupt, but in Russia? The instant socialism was decided upon, they were under attack literally with armies that included a substantial American component, and they had to go to war. And that's what gave Stalin. Dzhugashvili was his name, so much power. He was in charge of expropriations. He was a bank robber, and they were desperate for cash. They robbed banks, and they fought back, and for the longest time, they called it war socialism, but for the longest time, their movement was characterized by what they had to do first and foremost, which was to defend their lives from a very extensive multinational military attack. Once that was finished, then the cultural weight of the serf system reasserted itself in their very hierarchical, I think the word is nomenklatura, but I might be making a mistake and using Swedish instead. the hierarchy of their bureaucracies, and then they were under attack again from Hitler. And the very idea of socialism was so popular that Hitler threw it in with the name of his movement, which was called, you know, it's the Nazi movement, which is a shortening of National Socialism in German. And he would occasionally do things like allow soldiers to expropriate butter and things like that and send them back and say, look, we're socialistic. But that his movement was actually all about the Krupp's arms corporations. It's about the corporations generally, including the company that is now BASF. It was all about corporate rule, but the idea of socialism is so popular that you could paint your movement red and get tremendous support just on the outside hope that it would eventually turn into socialism. So this is a legacy that we have, and this is what the conservatives always want you to think of in terms of socialism, is that, you know, that terrible totalitarianism, socialism gone bent and wrong that was experienced in the mid-20th century. But go ahead, you had more to say.
Well, I think that's you kind of hit the nail. It is funny to think that when you look at old like Bolshevik graphics and stuff like that, there are just visual similarities between the two regimes. Like, you have black, white, and red as the main colors, and it's very, very rigid lines, and obviously you have like the swastika and stuff like that. So it just because of those visual elements, it's easy to just say, oh, you know, from some really denotative state, it's like, oh yeah, they're the same thing. But they're completely opposite. I mean, the Nazis were all about cutting social services and were extremely nationalistic and just all about, you know, erasing the lesser people, you know, essentially. It's interesting. But I was going to ask you, in terms of socialism not working, it did work in a lot of aspects, but it didn't work long term, and now they're, from what I understand, pretty much capitalist again. Is there like a book or a talk or a lecture by maybe somebody like Michael Parenti or
that's
something
the first
like
thing
that?
I thought of is look up Parenti on socialism. Yeah.
Okay, so he kind of explains, you know, like what goes wrong. I'll have to find a lecture. That's just I wanted somebody to have like this big definitive list of things that went wrong and why it would be different if it was implemented now, essentially.
Well, that's the big question, and yeah, that's where I'd start, is looking up Parenti's lectures on socialism. He had a pretty sparky presentation, and it's fun to listen to. So yeah, go to YouTube and look up Parenti socialism, and you'll get an earful.
Yeah, he's an awesome lecturer, and he's hilarious too, because he has such an awesome demeanor, very, very down to earth, and he always complains about the sound system. It's really hilarious.
Yeah,
he's a funny dude, but he's extremely intelligent. Well, awesome. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Thanks for calling in. Now, that's what I was hoping would happen. Someone would call in and actually talk about socialism rather than repeat the tired old memes. That it's all really about being in a labor camp, wearing a fur hat, and drinking borscht when you're allowed to. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is under attack by Fox News to the point of hysteria. And you may have noticed other commentators have pointed out that it's getting hilarious, that they're just so afraid of her that they have actually promoted her, her ideas, and sometimes quite correctly. Again, free college, Medicare for all. Oh no, the terror, the horror. 503-231-8187, I'll go to the next caller. Let's see, that's John. John's on the air.
Hello, this has a little bit to do with socialism, but one of my sisters has an alien husband who uses Kaiser facilities frequently, and she heard from the grapevine, I shouldn't really be saying this, but that Kaiser next year is going to have a 28% increase.
She has a husband from outer space?
Well, no, he's demented and all that, and so she uses Kaiser as a facility. That's her main HMO. And one of the nurses was telling, they're having problems at Kaiser, as you know.
Because
and,
of?
They said that they're going to be raising their premiums over a quarter, and like 28% in the next couple of years. So if you talk about medical costs going up.
Okay, well, that has to do with the insurance companies being between you and your medical care. It's more complex than that. Medical supplies have also used the, what's more fraught than needed medical supplies, have used the system in capitalism to get what they can. But when you're talking about a system like Blue Cross or Kaiser, they often deflect criticism they continually deflect criticism by labeling themselves and by functioning within the system of the non-profit. But those are just words, because when you've got a CEO collecting literally millions of dollars per year and a subclass under him of hundreds or maybe thousands of persons collecting upwards of half a million per year, you have profits. The profits are extracted by denying medical care, and you can call it non-profit by distributing the profits as salaries. That maybe you can get technical and call it a salary farm or something like that, but it's a profit-making system. They're lying. I think people need to understand what's going on there. Just like the for-profit, I would say more honestly, for-profit insurance systems, well, they may not be paying stockholders, but they're sure as hell paying the CEO class. And they will react to that by saying, oh, you can't get CEOs without paying them millions of dollars. I don't care. I don't give a damn about that.
Yeah.
Well, yes, you can, actually.
One of the public affairs programs on one of the radio stations, I heard that they made, they, meaning Kaiser, made $2 billion profit in 2017.
So that would be expressed as salaries, I guess, since, as we were saying,
yeah,
technically nonprofit.
Yeah, well, I'm just, you know, if you're talking about medicine and you know, socialism, I mean, you can see everybody's getting soaked.
Yeah, basically. I mean, and with our system, we pay more, far more, for medical care. So does that mean that you're in favor of socialism in terms of medical care?
Well, yeah. Well, this is getting to be a life and death, you know, situation now. You know, because some people just, wow, you know, they're paying like $700 to $1,200 a month for, you know, medical.
Can you imagine, you know, if the fire department treated you like Kaiser Permanente or Blue Cross does?
Oh. Yeah,
they'd show up and, have you got your card? Let's see if it's current. There's a copay while your house burns.
Well, if this next election turns deep red, you know, that's it. Party over. Never was really a party, but you're not invited. That's
yeah.
True.
It's a party in the sense of arriving vultures. Well, thanks very much for your
call.
Okay,
well, I just wanted to make that comment that, you know, this is not just a theory. This is like, you know, a survival kind of thing, you know. But anyway, thanks for letting me voice my opinion.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling in. Number to call 503-231-8187. Time is 9:46 in Cascadia, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, KBOO.fm. If you're listening online or you have access to the web, will you please click and give? How about $20? Got it? Because we, you know, we have that nonprofit thing going on where we really try to scrape by. You know, we were just so, scrapingly honest in some ways, and need cash. Oh, we're not, I mustn't forget the context. We're not collapsing. We have reserves, but we need cash. And this is how it's done. You do it. Okay, 503-231-8187. Let's talk socialism. And, of course, if you, if you're in the medical industry and you have information on what I started off with, that hand, foot, and mouth disease, I'm trying to collect information on that. And so I want to say that again. Primarily, I would like to have your information on Facebook. Look up Teresa Mitchell and put it on the thing that I just put up asking about it, or tag me at Twitter. Maybe that's a technical term these days. Maybe I shouldn't say tag me on Twitter. Okay, go on Twitter and make a tweet and address it to @KBOOPressWatch, and then I'll get... I need information. What's going on with this hand, foot, and mouth thing? It's painful at the least. It can kill. Help me out with that. That's a transmitter going out to you, and hopefully the information coming back. Number to call, 503-231-8187. And go to the next caller. Ellen's on the air.
Hi, I'm Ellen Saunders. I am co-chair of Neighbors Against Apple Valley Airport Expansion, and we have spent over $200,000 since 2004 to stop Mike Appleby from spraying the toxic pesticides of atrazine, 2,4-D, chlorpyrifos, Roundup in our forests.
What? No malathion?
What?
What, no malathion?
No. What I would like you to do is take a look at our website and also take a look at the website of the group called Beyond Toxics. We have been fighting against being poisoned for years and years, and Washington County just went ahead and put in their review of conditions recommendations, and they will continue to allow Mike Appleby's airport to hold its agricultural license. The Department of Agriculture did, in fact, fine him and suspend his pesticide spraying license for a year. But this is not just, it's not just a problem with Mike Appleby and Apple Valley Airport. We have very substantial documentation on our website, but Beyond Toxics is also working on this issue. Oregon Aviation Watch has also worked on this issue with us. and the truth of the matter is they're poisoning us. They're poisoning us with Roundup, but with all of these other toxic chemicals. And when you try to find out what they actually spray, they don't have to report it, not accurately, and they didn't. There was a man by the name of Daryl Ivey who drove truck for Mike Appleby into the forest, and he was sprayed and made very, very sick. And
okay, well,
Mike Appleby,
can you give me that web address again then?
Yeah, you sure can. Web address for Neighbors Against Apple Valley Airport Expansion is NAAVE.
Okay.
And the website for Beyond Toxics, I think, is just about beyondtoxics.org, but it's easily found. It's a group out of Eugene, and they are very, very careful with their documentation. I have worked at the state capitol to lobby for rules and regulations stopping this. The forest industry owns Oregon, and the chemical industry, along with Betsy Johnson, who is the senator from the North Coast area, supports the kind of chemical spraying that is going on.
Okay, and so NAAVE is a search term. Yeah. NAAVE, the V standing for Valley, and Beyond Toxics also. Okay, and so that obviously you're responding to my call to end the spraying of the forests, and thank you very much for calling in with that specific information. I think that is tools in the hands of the listening audience. Appreciate it very much. It's 9:52 almost, and let's see, I've got a couple more callers, so I'll try to go to them. And Gary's on the air.
Yeah, hey, Teresa.
Hi.
This is Gary. Just two quick comments. I grew up in California in the 60s and 70s, and California had free tuition for all of its state colleges and universities. My brother graduated from Cal Berkeley without paying tuition. They had, you know, fees and books and stuff like that, but California used to have free tuition. And also, and it, you know, gave them time to participate in protests and stuff. And I think when Ronald Reagan was governor, I think he was the one who did away with the free.
Yeah, it was a reaction to it. Yeah, I think that's why. Yeah. That's why the capitalists who own the media react so strongly to the very idea to talking about socialism at all. Because back in the 50s, right after the World Wars, you even had Eisenhower speaking, I don't know if he used the word socialism, but speaking very favorably about what the system was going to do for you and socialistic reforms. And that was a reaction to the fact that it was such a popular idea and socialism and organized socialists were a political force. And people did actually talk openly about such things, even while the dedicated capitalists and the right-wingers sneered and snarled about it. It was a topic. And it led to, as you say, certain reforms such as free college, other reforms, and that was a different world, and wealth was better distributed in the population. I won't say that that's true according to race lines, but wealth was better distributed in the population in the 1950s, far better than it is now, and that is why we have people starving on the sidewalks and living in little tents.
Yep. And as far as successful examples of socialism, all you have to do is look at Sweden and Finland and Norway and Denmark, and year after year, those countries, the people are rated as the happiest people on earth. Yes, they pay taxes, but people are not living on the streets.
Yeah, it's entirely different societies.
And my parents, when they were younger, they used to travel a lot. They one year they were in Oxford, and my mother tripped on some cobblestones and broke a tooth. And a kind passerby took her immediately to the local healthcare facility, and she got free emergency dental care for free.
That's how it's done, and that's even how it's done in a poor country like Cuba. Cuba, which is under constant and very active embargo, still, you don't pay for medical care there.
For any insurance information, they didn't give her a bill. That's how it's supposed to work.
Yeah.
Anyway, so those are examples of successful socialistic practices that exist today, and there's no reason other than greed why we don't have that here. So anyway, I have to go, but I just wanted to put that out, that we do have examples currently of successful socialist countries.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. And as I was saying earlier, those are very mild, basic socialistic reforms that make Fox News absolutely foam at the mouth. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez especially galled them by pointing out that when it comes to spending trillions on wars and paying for past wars, no one blinks or says, what about the cost? When it comes to paying for vicious imperialism, that's just automatic. But when it comes to just basic things that society needs, like healthcare, oh, you know, that's terrible. That's socialistic. That'll lead to oppression. Okay, I believe I have another caller, and so I'll go to Will. You're on the air, Will.
Hey, thanks for having me. I just wanted to bring up the topic of taxes in America, and historically speaking, Americans have always been a little leery of the idea of raising taxes. And I think that's one thing that the media plays into very frequently, is that your taxes will go up anytime any sort of progressive change occurs within society. I think it's a really good opportunity for a lot of politicians that might be campaigning on the progressive side of things to discuss how increasing taxes might seem like a bad thing at first. However, the benefits you'll gain, you'll reap so many more rewards as a result of socialized programs, specifically universal healthcare. I think that's one of the main places that people could be saving money, although you know how Americans tend to not enjoy having anything cost more. That's pretty much it. I think we just need to work on educating people about the benefits of collective programs. And to go with that, I also feel like schools need to be teaching collective ideas a little bit more from early ages, because you can go to like state parks and national parks and you'll see disrespect of common areas, which is another facet of socialism, just by like people trashing the parks and vandalizing national monuments. So that's pretty much it.
Thanks for sharing that. That is one of the aspects of capitalism, that we're encouraged to think of ourselves as competing with each other. Selfishness is good. Of course, it's not good. It's a vice. Getting up towards the top of the hour, let's see. Let me check with engineer and news director Derek. There is one caller left, and before I go to that last caller, I want to say there's been a change also in your web access to the news for the deaf community and for those who like to refer to what was said in the news. We are now putting the PM News text online. So you can find that if you pull up KBOO.fm and look to the right and scroll down to the blogs. You'll see that right at the top. We now have a text service for KBOO News. Proud to announce that. And so we'll go to the last caller. Francis, you have about 30 seconds.
I think the survey results reflected that people want what is called socialism. We don't have to call it that. We can call it something else if it scares people. But, you know, universal health care and such things are what everybody wants. So we can call it whatever we want to call it. But I think the whole scenario is going to be played out in Florida with the governor race. The progressive Democrat nominee who surprised everybody and got the nomination, he's a...
Yeah, that brings
Bernie
it back.
Sanders supports him.
That brings it back. These ideas are popular. And so thanks for bringing that up. You've been listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland, coming to you via our great big red and white transmitter on the West Hills at 90.7 FM, other frequencies here in Cascadia, and via KBOO.FM to all the ships at sea.
Tune in on Thursday, August 30th at 8 p.m. to celebrate the Native programmers and the Native community of KBOO as part of our 50th anniversary. Jack Malmstrom of Rose City Native Radio will host this special on-air program. You can join us at the Native Community Open House here at KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue from 7 to 10 p.m. on August 30th. More information about the Native Community Open House and the anniversary programming can be found at KBOO.FM.
KBOO is a proud co-sponsor of the Portland Folk Music Society's new concert season, which starts September 21st of this year and runs through May of 2019, all staged at the Reedwood Friends Church in Southeast Portland. The Portland Folk Music Society is pleased to present a lineup of national and regional artists, including Molly O'Brien and Rich Moore, the Kathy Kallick Band, the Honey Whiskey Trio, Legends of the Celtic Harp with Patrick Ball, True North, Tish Hinojosa, Pat Donahue, Nina Gerber and Chris Webster, and Dave Stamey. And for the first time, the Portland Folk Music Society is offering season ticket packages at prices below single show rates, either online or at the door. For more information, go to the website kboo.fm and look on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.